I think it's fear.
Yeah, I think it's fear. I think I'm just so scared of failing.
Mm.
Terrified. But so much so that I'm really good at taking action and going after stuff, you know, doing business, which sometimes you come out and you still can't get a job.
That's right. It is fascinating because it is a leap of faith, not just financial, but also emotional. Because if it did go wrong, not only have you lost the money that took to get up there, but also there's that fear of failure. And everyone tells you it's a thrive on it. Failure is a great thing. But sometimes it can also be absolutely demoralizing.
Join your host, Des Hamilton, to find out exactly how to say goodbye to being poor and hello to being rich.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the Goodbye Poor, Hello Rich show, Thursday edition. We are steamrolling towards the end of the year, and it's really great to have you on board and really great for you guys to keep coming back and showing me all this love. If I think about it too much, I'll get overwhelmed. So let's carry on skirting over it, shall we? Our sponsors, Selleramp, SaaS, continue to support the show as well. Entirely grateful to you. Selleramp, SaaS, as you know, is the best sourcing analysis software for any Amazon journey. It feels like I've not been talking about Amazon as often as I had previously done. We're going to rectify that. I don't want anyone to think that I've Amazon alone. Simply not true. But it is ticking over nicely. And I think I have more to offer in this space. So watch it, this space. I mean, right. This week, we got Hayden Davidson on. Hayden has been a friend of mine through this journey from the very, very early days. Hayden was the first guy that reached out and said, look, let's go and have a coffee. I'll come down to Brighton. And we went and met up and we spent a bit of time together. It was the first sort of network building exercise that I'd done. And he was the first one to call me a content creator. And it freaked me out, tapped into my imposter syndrome a lot. But Hayden gave me his time. He gave me his advice and I took it. And we can talk about this on this interview. And you can see for yourself the dynamic that we've got. What's really lovely on this one is we were recording it in Hayden's own podcast studio that he uses for his own podcast, the Make It Big podcast. I'm going to put the links down there. Can't recommend this one enough. He's already had Simon Squibb on. He's already had Ben Alistair on. He's already had me. Some really big guests. And he's kicking on and he means business. I really recommend you give him a follow, as well as me, for God's sake, because this is my show. So this is me interviewing Hayden. This is part one. I kind of want to give you a bit of context. We had got back from Dubai by this time. We only recorded this about a week and a half ago, and I was in self-reflective mode. I'm very vulnerable in the chat that I have with Hayden and the chat that Hayden has with me. And I think this comes out in this one. So enjoy. I'll see you on the other side. Roland. Hayden, welcome to the show. Lovely, lovely to have you on here and in person as well.
Big one, mate. Yeah, thanks for having me.
No, no problems at all. Right, so this is a weird one, right? Hayden's just interviewed me for his show, and now we flipped this and I'm interviewing him for my show, and we've got this podcast studio that is awesome. So it looks different to the ones that I usually do where I'm sat in the kitchen, and it's actually much, much more comfortable as well, which is nice to know. Right, you and I, we've been friends and networked for, blimey, well before I even started this podcast. And it feels like this is far too late. So firstly, I apologize. But now we got you on, man. Let's make this a good one. Everybody who follows me is likely to follow you as well. And they would have seen you on their socials, on their YouTube. But mate, talk us through everything that you've done over, wow, what must be last 6 years?
About six now, yeah.
Yeah. So talk us through how you actually got started and what it was that made you get to where you are now.
Oh, interesting. All the way back, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
So 6 years ago was the e-commerce journey, you know? 6 years ago was the e-commerce journey, but 6, 7 years, something. 2019, December 2019.
Why?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. About 6 years. I started my first business at 19, and that was a gardening and landscaping business, you know? So I quit my job at the coffee shop because someone was asking me to do stuff which wasn't part of the job role, like clean ceilings and stuff.
Oh, why?
Scrape dirt off the ceilings. I was like, I'm not doing that. Handed in my notice. You didn't think I would, but I handed in my notice. And then after that, I then went ahead and with my business partner, my mate at the time, started a gardening and landscaping business. wasn't very passionate about it myself, but I kept going with it and kept going, and you know, both putting work to that. And then we built that to three vans, you know. So I was like 21 years old, and we had five people working for us and three vans, and that was all good. I then got a lot of confidence from that. I was still pretty naive though, so I went and thought that I could just be the next Bill Gates in a couple of years. So I went and started these other businesses. I had a subscription box business, which was e-commerce as well.
No, what's
not
what's
on Amazon. It was called Bare Essentials. So what we were doing was, boxing up a load of items, like in a bundle, funny enough, boxing up a load of items similar to what a lot of people do today in bundles, but it was all Shopify, like Facebook ads. And it was your Bare Essentials, it was called. So the logo was a bear, and it was meant to be men's Bare Essentials. So your ear stuff and your toothbrushes and stuff like that.
Right.
But you could get, the problem with that is that you could get it with a supermarket. So it was a good learning curve for us. And, you know, we put 50 quid, 100 quid on Facebook ads and expected to get rich overnight. And obviously that didn't happen. So we're just mega naive, you know. that then led me on to a cleaning agency. So we started a cleaning agency, because the problem with the gardening business, although we grew that, we got out of it because winter was a real bugger. You know, Simon Squid, I just did a story on him. Obviously, I had him on my podcast as well. He said that the big thing about the gardening business for him was winter as well.
Right.
And no one thinks about it until you're actually in it. You know, it's 3 or 4 months a year. You think it's going to be all right. It's not all right at all. So had the gardening business, that. You know, was a struggle. So we thought, oh, maybe if we do a cleaning agency, then we don't have to worry about winter because we're working inside.
Absolutely.
So I was cleaning people's toilets.
Right.
I was cleaning, you know, whatever, you know, like cobwebs out of old ladies' houses, old men's houses and stuff like that. And so was my business partner. And then we built up this, turned it into an agency, and we had 5 or 6 cleaners working for us as well. So did all these things, but all of them got to a certain level. And then we thought, oh, no, this isn't for us. And then we moved on again. So we went back to the gardening, built that up again. Got it good. Something was not letting me push it any harder. You know, I just, it really wasn't for me, you know, like working outside, manual labor, you know, I sort of felt like I did enough of it.
Yeah.
So then I went off on my own just to tick over, just to still earn some income. I got myself a van and was just doing gardening on my own, and, you know, 150 quid a day, 170 quid a day, which, you know, 8 years ago was quite a lot of money.
Absolutely,
and,
right.
You know, especially when I was quite young at the time. And then I started researching Amazon. And then I thought, I was watching some guy, it's called The Last Amazon Course. It's like a $1 a month or something. And it was like the best course ever. It was all based around private label. I remember like a couple of times I was doing people's gardening, then at lunchtime, chucking it down a rain. Even at lunchtime, I was sitting there watching this course on my phone, you know, just really getting into it, figuring out how you do this stuff, you know. But I was struggling to take that first step. I was just struggling with that self-belief, to be honest. But I just kept looking at it. And then I discovered something called online arbitrage, which was different to private label because you didn't need so much investment. Mm. You know, some guy told me about it on another course that I was on. And I went down that rabbit hole. And then that was a much lower barrier to entry because you only need to risk 500 quid or 1,000 quid or something. You know, you can even start with retail arbitrage. You know, so I ended up doing that. I was buying a bit from retail, going around the shops. So I was doing a little bit of online arbitrage, looking for deals, buying it like that. So I started doing that, and that's how I started, really. I started with £1,000, and then I borrowed another £1,000 off my mum because I couldn't even get a credit card at the time. Paid her back, you know, 2 or 3 months later once I'd gone and got a bit more money. And then I got a little loan from the bank a few months later, around about £15,000.
Nice.
So I got a loan from the bank at £15,000. I then went all in on arbitrage, really. And scaled that well, probably to about $250,000 a year. I think I scaled that to $250,000 a year in the first sort of, it's top of my head, something like that, about $250,000.
In sales,
that was
incredible.
I think that was probably the second year, maybe 2.5 years in or something.
We're in
like
lockdown
that.
At this point.
Yeah. We're in lockdown at that point, yeah. So, yeah, scaled it like that. I got fed up with the price tank and everything like that. I thought, you know, there's got to be something better. So I discovered Natalie.
Yeah.
Who's been mentoring me for years now, Natalie Cromie. Big shout out to her. And she told me something called bundles, you know. And I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. What's that, you know? And so it's similar to private label, but, you know what it is. But
yeah.
You know, it's similar to private label, but you're still sort of arbitrage on steroids, if you like, isn't it? You know, you can put it in your
great
own
ways,
boxes, ain't it? Your own gift boxes, whatever, or just bundle them together without a box, you know. And then you can retain the full buy box. You can retain the full what's it called?
The IP.
You've got the intellectual property and the listing, no one else can get on the listing, essentially. So I did that. Overnight, I scrapped the arbitrage, literally overnight. I said, I'm done with that. And I went all in on bundles.
Wow.
And then within the next 3 months, I've made more profit than I'd ever made in my life. You know, I found myself making like, this was a lot for me at the time, like $3,000 or $4,000 profit in like the first bundle, like November I had, or December or something like that. And I was like, wow, I'm still living at home at this time. Do you know what I mean? I was like, that was a lot of money back then. I was like, wow, I can actually pay myself, you know, because you need in e-commerce, you need the bigger margins, the bigger ROI, because people forget that you're reinvesting that money into stock.
Exactly.
So I was actually able to extract some business, some money out of the business for the first time properly. And I was like, wow, this is great. So I was all in on bundles, had some really good success, got quite lucky on some products, to be honest, but I think the timing was great. My first bundle, which I ever launched, I've made over 75,000 net profit on that to this day. I've sold over 11,000 of that, I think.
Wow. 11,000 to 12,000. Are you still selling that?
Still selling that now. Bestseller this year. It will still be my bestseller, and I started 6 years ago. Loads of competitions come on, but it just shows you how much Amazon loves the old listings. So yeah, I did that. And then I opened up in the USA as well. So as my confidence was building, as my finances were building, as my resources were building, opened up in the USA, scaled that up as well. And then that brings us to now, where I think we've done 2.7 million in sales, in US dollars, 2.7 million across since I started about 6 years ago. This month, December, we should cross 200,000 in sales just in this month for our UK store alone.
Well,
I would say. Yeah, we're calming down on the US front there, but may do 30,000 in the US as well. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we're sort of, just restructuring that a bit. And then obviously all this time I've been documenting it, which I completely forgot to say, on my YouTube channel. So literally if you go to my YouTube channel, Mr. Hayden YouTube channel, and go back to the oldest video, I think it's 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. Probably 5 years ago, I started documenting it. And then the first video was like Amazon V's TikTok or something like that, Amazon private label V's arbitrage, I think, was my first video. So I started documenting it, did it on TikTok as well, all that sort of good stuff, documented the whole journey through the thin, the bad times, the good times. And I also had a few sponsors on there. I was doing affiliate marketing on my YouTube as well. And then as of recent time, I've also started an Amazon PPC agency as well. So I ended up becoming a bit of an expert in Amazon PPC with all the products that I've launched successfully. Hundreds of thousands in ad spend for myself, and now for loads of clients. So we thought it was a good idea to launch a PPC agency. So that's where I am now, really. I've got my PPC agency. Wow. I've still got my podcast with my media thing. And then I'm still selling a lot on Amazon. Really.
It's incredible, isn't it? It blows my mind. And I knew this about you, of course I did, but it blows my mind how the entrepreneur in you, Amazon is the thing that opens the door.
That's
and
it.
And then away you go. And I think it's essential. Everyone sort of sees Amazon selling, oh, do you think it's oversaturated? You go, well, you're looking at it wrong. It's Amazon. It's something, it's step one on the journey. That's incredible, mate. Good for you. Really, really good. If we go all the way back to the gardening and the cleaning, funny enough, we got our first cleaner a couple of months ago. Mm. And the first thing we said is, oh, this is a great business model. Because it just seems like a really good business model as well, doesn't it? But you're right. People just, they completely underestimate the graft that goes in. You must have worked your nuts off for that.
Yeah. Do you mean when I was physically doing it or with the agency managing the
stuff? Both.
Obviously, you've got to want to do it, you know? And there's some people that are really passionate about cleaning. There's some people that really enjoy it. We were, a couple of young kids at the time, 21 years old. I remember we had this one client, this sort of slightly older woman. And she said to us, she just came in one day, we were sort of dusting and, all this stuff, cleaning her house. And, she didn't know that we were entrepreneur and we had a few staff members working for us as well. When I say staff, they were subcontracted in through our business. So we were earning when they were working.
Yeah, yeah.
And she sort of said to me, lads, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing with your life? Sort of thing, and then my business partner outside, he was outside getting something from the van, which we had all the cleaning tools in. Someone said something to him as well. It really affected him and me, our confidence. They said, oh, can't you get a better job than that? Or something, really looking down on us and really judging us. And I was thinking, oh, they just think we're cleaners.
Yeah.
They don't know that we've started a business and that, we're doing this entrepreneurial stuff. So Yeah, sorry, I forgot what your question was, but it was tough.
Just how much hard work it was. But no, that counts. The mental strain on you.
That's why
well.
We stopped. That's why we stopped. That could have been really successful. We stopped because, A, we didn't really have any purposeful meaning towards it whatsoever. We didn't like it. But we let the naysayers get in the way, you know. And we scaled that fast. I mean, when I say scale, we weren't on loads of money from it, but we were a couple of kids and we had four or five cleaners working for us. We had loads of the work was coming in.
Yeah.
And all we were doing was putting out leaflets.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, really underrated. I built up to 3 vans in my gardening business just doing leaflets. No marketing whatsoever. Me and my business partner on the street, putting leaflets through letterboxes. We did the exact same with the cleaning. So underrated.
Yeah.
You know, I could definitely sell a course on how to start a service business. That's for sure. All you do is put leaflets through the doors. We did that, scaled up. And the hardest thing about that was the staff, you know, because a good cleaner works for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, not all, but a lot of good cleaners work for themselves. So we were struggling to get reliable staff.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know whether this is an urban myth, but I had a friend who told me his friend literally walked into one of the buildings in Canary Wharf.
Yeah.
Didn't have a product to his name, but went in and said, I'm a cleaner. Whatever your contract is, I will charge you less.
Yeah.
And basically got the contract of one of the big high rises in Canary Wharf.
Wow.
Then he went to another one and said, I've got the contract at that building. And then he basically had to go out and get his kit. And then he realized that, yeah, he had these buildings to clean because he didn't have any staff or anything like that. But
yeah,
that sort of initiative, I think, it's all about the hustle, isn't it?
Yeah.
And again, the leaflet drops, people just won't bother doing that these days. They'll stick something on Facebook.
That was the hardest thing mentally, the leaflet drops.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes it was raining, sometimes it was cold. Yeah. Even if it wasn't, you've got to remember, some of my mates are coming out of university at this time, or just about to, doing law degrees, you know, doing business, which sometimes you come out and you still can't get a job.
That's right.
But especially the law degrees, the math degree, they get really good jobs when they come out. So they're coming out, you've got to picture this, they're coming out 60, 70, 80 grand jobs, potentially, maybe start at 50, whatever. Yeah. Some of them bankers, whatever, start at 60. And I'm putting leaflets out for cleaning jobs. I'm putting leaflets out to try and cut people's lawn.
Mm.
I was really struggling with that mentally, like for a self-worth point of view.
Yeah, I can get it. And people do, they look down on people like that for no reason whatsoever, but I can understand it.
Yeah,
that's fascinating. So then you decided to go in on Amazon. What I love is that you were building it up. You saw the concept and you went, right, that's it. Mum and dad, lend me some money. Bank, lend me some money. So while you were still fairly fresh, you had a good 17 grand to plow into this business. That's quite a lot to get going with, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. And by the way, I made some really good money from the gardening stuff, but what we'd done is sort of spent. So I had to spend a lot of that on the van and stuff for the gardening business.
Yeah.
So I put 1,000 in myself and then borrowed 1,000 off mum. As I say, paid her back within 3 months, took the loan. But I also then sold the van and then, you know, had that to sort of live off. So I was literally living off the money that I saved from from the van and everything like that. We make good money. What I'm saying, we make good money from the gardening business and everything, but we'd gone and spent like 18 grand of it on a property course before, which I completely forgot. I had a whole property journey as well.
So wow.
I used to have a property lettings business. I had like things called rent to rent. I don't know if you heard of them.
Yeah,
so
we
had like 24 tenants at one stage or something like that.
Wow.
So we had that property business and we'd invested a lot of money in there and stuff like that. But yeah, that was just, I guess, just another lesson there. Yeah.
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 That's fascinating. Just on a quick one, what happened with that? How come you stopped doing that? Because the property stuff, having just interviewed Rob Moore, it's a bit of a runner, isn't it?
Well, it depends what model you do.
Yeah.
And once again, like anything, just sticking with it for a long enough time, but wanting to stick with it. I mean, we had a bad business partnership set up, so the profit was really diluted, you know, so there was 3 business partners in it. And some of the property deals we do put a lot of work into it, a lot of effort, because we had to drive out of our area to get these deals.
Yeah.
They were sort of, the rent-to-rents weren't working well in the area where we used to live, because it was a bit too affluent. So we used to have to drive to like Maidstone and do deals over there, that sort of way. And we were putting in a lot of effort and then we were getting, you know, profit maybe 400 or 500 quid each per house, which sounds good.
Mm.
But when you dilute that with 3 business partners and then you've got to have at least 30 of them for it to be worth it, haven't you?
Yeah,
you do. And it was just a slog, to be honest. I don't like it. It's not a business model that I like.
But yeah, I got offered into a rent-to-rent business model when I was just getting going and my numbers got up. Really, really lovely guy, really genuine opportunity. But yeah, same. I didn't feel like that industry was me.
No, I didn't like it. And also, if I went back, I'd be like, why would I do rent to rent where I take the risk on of renting a property. You've got to guarantee that landlord the rent to
That's
get a
right.
deal.
Yeah.
You're going to, a lot of the time, cover the maintenance of it. And then you've got to find the tenants, rent it out. And if the tenant doesn't pay, you've still got to pay the landlord.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that again.
No.
All I would do is just start a management business and take 10 or 12%
yeah,
and then not have any risk.
Yeah.
Like, but to me, that's so obvious now.
Yeah. You
know? But back then it was like, yeah, let's just do that because I sort of got sold some course.
Definitely, you know, mate. It's amazing how you evolve, isn't
yeah.
it? So yeah, so you're in this Amazon, you got a good 15 to 20 grand.
Yeah.
And you're just doing pure OA. You're just literally
went all in.
Shallow and wide, but really wide.
For about a year and a half I went all in.
Wow.
Yeah, and you could see this on my YouTube channel, the old videos I used to talk about all the time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Just shallow, not wide, went all in. Built a little bit of a team up and just hit it really hard, yeah. So
fantastic.
I really just went in that one thing.
Yeah.
For a year and a half, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then how was that? How was that when you were getting going? So you realised that was going to be a runner more than the gardening business, I guess, and you slowly shut it down.
Yeah, well, the gardening business definitely could have made me a lot more money straight away because the difference is with the e-commerce, with the Amazon, like what we just spoke about, it's the, you've got to reinvest that money.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas with the gardening, like with the e-commerce, sorry, it's a business you've got to keep reinvesting. It's stock-based. So if you make £4,000 a month net profit according to your sellable dashboard or whatever thing you use, that's, you can't just pay yourself £4,000 because the business will be going down.
That's
you
right.
need to be probably paying yourself £1,500 or something because you need the business to be building and you need a buffer there and you need to be reinvesting. I didn't realize that at the time, obviously. So I definitely in the short term would have been better off to stick with the gardening because I was only 150 quid, 180 quid a day sometimes, you know, just doing gardening and it's pure profit.
Yeah.
But I decided, to go in on that. And the reason I went in all in on that and the gardening on the e-commerce was because it was just going to give me that level of freedom, you know, being able to work from a laptop. You know, I guess the lazy side of me, if you like, but it wasn't lazy because it was bloody hard work.
Yeah.
But it's much easier to do that than do gardening and cut people's hedges for 10 hours a day.
Oh,
I'll tell you that.
Yeah. So,
especially in the rain.
Were you, how many hours roughly were you working on your Amazon business?
In the early days, all day.
Yeah.
Every day. Even the evenings, like I was living at home, my mum didn't have a girlfriend, didn't have anything like that. You know what I mean? So,
why not?
All the time. Any time that I wasn't out and about, you know, with friends or something, I was just obsessed with it, I'd say. I would say I was highly obsessed.
Yeah, because it's one of the things that stands out about you, having known you and having known your journey, is your drive in all of it. I'm going to start a gardening business, wallop, free vans, staff.
I'd just do it.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah.
Have you tapped into that? Have you tapped into what is it that drives you? What is it that stands you out so you can say, no, I don't care how old I am. I don't care what business model it is. I'm going all in and I'm freaking relentless.
I think it's fear. Yeah, I think it's fear. I think I'm just so scared of failing. Terrified. But so much so that I'm really good at taking action and going after stuff. So it's really good to I would say to have a low level medium business that's making okay money. That's really good for, you know, like that's what I'm really scared of, that fear of failing and the fear of being a loser.
Mm.
So I've got a massive spark inside me that just says, right, I'll start this gardening business and get it to a good stage. I'll start Amazon and get it to a good stage, whatever. Where it's a downfall is when I want to take that thing to the next level.
Mm.
And I've got to take a massive leap of faith or take a massive risk. And then that fear inside of me stops me doing that because I'm worried about building that little success that I've built.
Yeah.
In my eyes, little success. Some people say big success. You know?
I know what you mean.
In my eyes, little success. You know, like when I'm talking about wanting to do multiple millions a year, you know, to get to that requires a lot more risk. You know,
it does.
A lot of the time.
Yeah.
Or leaps of faith.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, yeah, the fear definitely drives me to just take loads of action, but I struggle once I've got to a certain stage to then to take more leaps of faith because I'm worried about losing what I've built, you know.
That's
what
I'm
tackling with at the moment, yeah.
Yeah. It is fascinating because it is a leap of faith, not just financial, but also emotional. Because if it did go wrong, not only have you lost the money that took to get up there, but also there's that fear of failure. And everyone tells you it's thrive on it. Failure is a great thing, but sometimes it can also be absolutely demoralizing, can't it? And I completely understand that. I really do. It's really interesting. I've just listening to you, you can't help but relate it to what's going on yourself as well. What I've found myself doing is I take something to a certain degree on my own, and then I tend to collaborate just to spread the risk of financial and emotional, to be honest with you, because it's collectively everyone's fault, you know. But no, it is interesting. But you have done that, though, because you did take your OA and you got to a quarter of a million, and then you took the bundles and you went for that, and you're growing, 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 and you are scaling, aren't you, right now?
Yeah, I'd say so. I've definitely noticed it this month where we should do 200,000, maybe even a quarter of a million. I don't know, depending how it works out, as long as the sales go as crazy as they do every year. Which that's the only time when I really notice it, though. You know what I mean? Because a lot of the time, this entrepreneurship stuff just graph, graph, graph. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't really take a minute to look back. I am definitely growing, especially in terms of my internal confidence and the belief I have in myself. But there's still something there. I've got a lot of insecurities around a lot of certain stuff, and definitely what you said about teaming up with other people, that's definitely what I've realized that I need to do. You know, I'm talking to a guy now, which I may be going into business with, about, you know, starting an e-commerce brand together, and I think the deal's going to be done, and that can really scale to the moon.
Nice.
Because he ticks all my insecurities that I haven't got. I can bring a lot to the party in terms of what I just said, taking massive action. I've got a lot of experience with e-commerce, but he's an expert in, you know, hiring teams. He's an expert in selling e-commerce brands. He's an expert in branding. He's an expert in basically pushing forwards to scale something to the next level rather than making 100 grand a year. He knows how to make it 500 grand a year and then exit.
Yeah.
I don't have a clue about that stuff.
No.
If I looked at scaling a business of 500 grand profit, the infrastructure of staff on that, the infrastructure of,
logistics,
all the systems and operations, that's not my strong point. And I've got a lot of fear around that, to be completely honest, you know. He hasn't. And he knows how to set it up for an exit, you know. So that's sort of what I'm sort of figuring out now. You know what I mean? Like, I need to work with people that feel my insecurities.
Yeah.
And that's how I think how you level up, and, you know.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Again, going back to the Rob Moore thing, it became a bit of a coaching session, and he said that there's no such thing as a self-made millionaire. There's just no such thing. Yeah. That is someone taking the credit for a team's worth of work.
Mm.
And I completely agree. The thing that I like to say lately is that the rising tide raises all ships. If you can get loads of you all together working at it and the tide rises and you all go up together, that's a lovely thing, mate. Yeah, I completely agree. I really do.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it's been one of those, isn't it? The entrepreneur journey, and you know this better than anyone, it just feels like you're putting out fires left, right, centre, and then all of a sudden quarter four's on you. And then for quarters one to three, there's just a few more fires to put out, and then quarter four's on you again. This year has been savage, isn't it? In terms of the challenges, the policy changes, the general platform, because you were big on your UK to USA stuff, weren't you, your bundles? How has the recent change that Amazon did there? Because I think what Amazon are doing is indicative of wider entrepreneurial challenges on any industry.
Yeah.
Your approach to it was amazing, but talk us through how you found out what was coming down the track and how you adapted.
Yeah, so with the UK to USA Amazon stuff that we do, we were 85% arbitrage, by the way, like 15% bundles, and lucky the bundles we do are still going to be okay.
Oh, great.
They still meet the policy. We were never the two-pack of, you know, fairy liquid with a sponge bundlers. We never did that. We did sort of what I class as like proper bundles, you know, like gift stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So luckily we're still all right with that stuff. That wasn't actually the reason that I've decided to sort of pull the plug on it. So I decided to stop selling there basically because of, I had two staff members just on that. We were spending 5-6 grand a week on stock. A lot of the stock that we were sending in was going expired. Even if it wasn't expired, Amazon were marketing as expired, going into unfulfillable inventory and stuff like that. So we, you know, thousands of pounds lost. We were a lot of the stuff like brand gating and stuff like that. So we were leaking money, from what I see. We're still making good money, but we were leaking money.
Yeah.
And for me, it was more the mental craziness that it was causing inside my head. You know, I just realized that I had to start going after what I really want to go after and take things, you know, a lot more seriously. And it just felt too messy for me.
Okay.
We are going to go back into it, but, you know, fully owned branded stuff.
Yeah.
You know? As I say, fully owned branded, fully private label sort of thing, most likely. rather than sort of messing around with arbitrage and all the moving parts. I'm trying to get away from moving parts.
Yeah.
The more simple things are, the easier it is to make more money from it and scale. You know what I mean?
I think you're right. I think Amazon themselves are trying to get away from moving parts as well.
Yeah.
It does feel a bit more brand heavy in the way that they're shifting the policies.
Yeah.
No, fascinating though. It really is.
It's like this. I'll just touch on this. It's like this Christmas, as I say, you know, we should sell 15 to 18,000 of the types of products that we do. You know, we sell a lot of bundles on Amazon. We do 15 to 18,000 of them. But what people don't take into account, it sounds good. What people don't take into account is the fact that if you've got 15,000 or 18,000 bundles and every single item in it has got seven items in it, I'm sourcing over 100,000 products.
Wow.
For 1 month of sales, logistically, that's a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, it's taken the last 2 months haven't been fun because I've been preparing for our biggest month ever.
Yeah.
And it sounds good to sound a podcast, may do a quarter of a million or 200 grand in 1 month, and we make really good margin on it. That sounds good and it's worth it because of what we get from it. But the last 2 months haven't been fun. I've been more stressed than I've ever been in my life, you know, and some of that, a couple of that's been taken out of my girlfriend, you know, that's not nice.
No.
I don't like that. I don't like to be stressed when I'm at home. You know, I don't want to be stressed around my mum. I don't like them seeing that side of me. And that's tough.
Yeah.
You know, like, and when it started affecting my personal life, I was like, oh, something's got to give.
Yeah.
You know? And that's why I made the decision for the USA for now. That's just not moving parts. Too many moving parts.
I think that's a really, really valuable lesson. And we talked earlier, didn't we, about the non-negotiables. But I think that's exactly it. You can't help it. It is the loved ones that feel the brunt of what you're doing. And it's horrible.
It's highly embarrassing.
Yeah.
The other day, I'll be completely honest. I'd never get stressed with my girlfriend specifically or do anything, you know, like aggressive to her or anything like that. But I got stressed with myself. And I you know, had a bit of a funny 5 minutes with myself, to be honest, to put it lightly, you know what I mean? I was sort of just really frustrated in my house. Once again, not to her, she was nowhere near me, but on my own,
in our bedroom. Yeah.
But it was just so embarrassing that she saw me get like that. And like, I'm like, that's not who I am, you know what I mean? And like, there's only so many times I should put up with that as well.
Absolutely right.
And I'm well aware of that. And I can have all the money in the world, but if the love of my life doesn't want to be with me because I've acted a certain way.
Yeah.
What are we doing it for?
No, exactly right.
Same with my family, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want, you know what I mean? That's why we're doing it all. So why would I risk that?
Exactly. Nothing is worth that.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree. No, good for you. But I think that's a really important point as well, isn't it? You've got 7 or 8 products per bundle. You're trying to pull them into what is probably either a prep center or a 3PL kind of thing. And then you've got to manage that at that scale. And you're not hands-on, so all of a sudden the control is taken away from you that you're putting your faith in something else.
That's
and it's
issue.
All going out.
And I've never wanted a warehouse.
No.
I've maybe doing this brand deal, I may have to get one eventually, but maybe not though. Because if you're doing something that isn't bundles, by the way, bundles are great. You can make loads of money from them. But scaling them, totally different ballgame. You know, like if you're scaling stuff, a bundle that's got 7 or 8 moving parts in it, for example, you want to sell 15,000 bundles in 1 month? Yeah, you better be ready for that challenge. You better have the right systems and operations in place. You better have your own premises. Otherwise, it can be a lot of work. If you're scaling a private label brand, you've got 5 products that sell 10,000 a month, easy.
No problem.
There's other challenges that come with that, but
it's
much easier.
Yeah.
You know, you're shipping pallets in and you're forwarding them on.
That's it.
And that's what I've realized, you know, a lot of people have got a lot of fear around scaling, and a lot of the gurus will say that you shouldn't. You know, you've got to know what you want, because, you know, it's going to come with complications, and it does, but it does depend on the model you're doing. Brand deals is very different to private label. Private label is very different to bundles. Bundles are very different to arbitrage. Everyone's got their own challenges.
Yes.
But some just, I don't think, should be scaled.
No, it's a really good point.
Scale more than like a couple of hundred grand a month.
Yeah. And it's not talked about either. And this is what we're saying, like online arbitrage, just scaling our online arb. You're basically buying 6 to 10 units.
Yeah.
Of what will end up being hundreds, thousands of SKUs.
So messy.
Yeah.
All that admin. And as you can, I know people that have scale bundles, by the way. I'm not saying you can't.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's kind of like how much money do you need? Because 200 grand a month in bundles, you should be doing some good margins on that. 25% net. If not, you're probably doing something wrong, or you're doing a different type of thing.
This podcast alone has grown something like 400%. I'll give you the real stats next week, once I've got them written down in front of me and I'm not plucking numbers out of the sky. But it all links back to these conversations that I've had with the likes of people like Hayden. How inspiring. the sheer graft in the guy. And you forget how young he is because he's so mature in the way that he presents himself. And he knows his goals and he is driving towards them. His mentality with this podcast is the same as his mentality as a cleaner with a cleaning firm or the gardener with the gardening firm. Six vans, man. Six vans. He would have been 19, 20 years old. The graft, the thought of saying, you know what, I'm not going to advertise on Facebook like everyone else does. I'm going to do leaflet drops. Amazing. Amazing. And it's that stuff that's inspiring, isn't it? It's that stuff when you think, right, if he did that to make himself stand out in overcrowded categories, overcrowded niches, and then he's implemented that into his Amazon business, and now he's implementing that into driving forward his own podcast, that guy's going places. It's as simple as that. Now, if we can take a fraction of that and put it into our own life, granted, we've all got different responsibilities. You've got different responsibilities to me. I've got different responsibilities to Hayden. It goes on and on and on. But all you got to do is put in a fraction of that and you'll see good results. Mark my words. So on that beautifully optimistic note, we'll wrap it up there. We're going to see you on Tuesday, Christmas Eve. And then I'll see you again on Boxing Day. Whew. And we are rolling on. Have yourselves a lovely week. Have yourselves a merry little Christmas, and we will see you on the other side. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the £200,000 to £100,000 Challenge podcast. Make sure you join us next time for more real talk and some undoubtedly terrible jokes as Des gets ever more closer to saying goodbye poor, hello rich. Just a little reminder that this podcast is for information and entertainment purposes only. It cannot and does not constitute any form of financial advice. We know things are tough for a lot of people right now, so if you need assistance organising your money, please seek the help of a qualified financial advisor.